Welcome to Ask Wynn, everyone. And before I bring my guest on, I do have a quick programming announcement. Ask Wynn is soon to be coming to all Alexa devices, a.k.a. Lady That Can, because I know you guys will be screaming at me because I just made Lady That Can go off. And so she will soon be featuring Ask Wynn as soon as that skill becomes available from my podcast host. I will let you know so you can add her to your morning briefing and repertoire of skills. Won't that be fun? Hint, hint. So you can hear my voice on Lady That Can. But enough of my programming announcement. I want to bring on Carolyn Cook. Carolyn Cook used to be a attorney, and then she suffered injuries and gave her law practice up. And so what I'm going to do is ask Carolyn Cook four baseline questions, and then I'm going to flip it and let her interview me. So without further ado, I'm going to let Miss Carolyn take it away.
Hi, how are you, Wynn?
I am fantastic. So please explain to my fan base more of what you do.
Well, right now what I am doing, and working real hard at it, is to raise awareness for people with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, and complex post-traumatic PTSD. And so what I'm doing is getting together just regular folks that have not had the chance for resources or have been able to go out and speak to people or even have been willing to go out and seek treatment because they're just on that fear level where they don't want to talk about it. And so we're broaching the subject, we're having a conversation, and we're reaching out. And what I hope to inspire is that these people can see that there is hope and that they can seek help and their life can get better and that they can move away from the darkness and start to have a daily life again with their friends and their family. And that's the important
thing
that I
want to do. Well, I don't know if you know this, Caroline. I don't know if you know this, but I am also a survivor of a traumatic brain injury. I not only have CT, but I have a brain bleed. Well, I got a brain bleed 3 days after I was diagnosed with CT. Lucky me. Lucky me. And
yeah.
I am a survivor of a brain bleed, and lucky me. So I swear that without my brain bleed, my CT would be a lot better than it is.
Yes, I can understand that. The damage with traumatic brain injury, you lose memory. You can't speak as well. You can't form your thoughts as well. It's a really drastic change from everyday life that you had before that. And people are not aware that it can be permanent, and you don't know until it happens to you. So you just
Mine is definitely permanent, and I got diagnosed with it when I was young. So luckily, my brain was able to semi-recover, but I'm still working on it. It's a daily challenge, it's a daily struggle.
Yeah.
A brain bleed after 31 years of it and CT on top of it. So,
yes. Yeah, it is a daily struggle. But I feel that there is hope. I think that the brain can grow and move away from that. You just have to keep learning. And you have to strive to develop that brain and make it work for you. I think music is a great healing instrument. that has been highly underrated. And without that music and sense of calm and trying to learn music to play the piano, I don't think my success would have come through, because I certainly wasn't getting any help with the medical community. So it was a challenge every day to try and move past that. And, you know, you've got friends and family that can see that you're struggling, and they're not sure what to do for you either. So that was also a challenge, because there was no way of expressing the changes that I felt from the injury, just that it was there. And I could feel the pressure come down and cross my eyeballs and cross my forehead. And I couldn't explain to you why it started and why most of the day it wasn't there, but there was an impact, and it was a challenge to work with it every day, to just maintain my sense of living and my sense of communication with people, and not lose it out of frustration. That was a big challenge.
Now, if you don't mind me jumping in here a little bit, how did you acquire this brain injury?
It was an accident. I was going to help a friend, and I actually got out of the car, and she was actually getting ready to deliver another member of her family. And I got concerned and started going at a running pace towards the house and caught my foot on the edge of the cement and went falling and flying face first into the cement. And I couldn't get my hands up fast enough, like most people, to stop my fall, because I've also had some temporary work on my hands for my carpal tunnel syndrome. So it was a double challenge to stop the fall and get my face off of the damage. And when I got up, I knew it was bad. But it was just an accident. It could happen to anybody. It could happen in a car accident. My daughter had some concussive syndrome in her car accident, and we didn't realize it until we started moving along during the year when the headaches wouldn't clear, and then the doctors finally confirmed. So it's not unusual for someone to have a fall. Falls are a big accident that happens every year to many people, and sometimes during the fall, people do not survive it, and it's just an accident. There's nothing you can do about it. But I was grateful that I had a lot of training before that, both as an emergency medical technician and both as in mentorship, because that allowed me to give myself more grace and realize that I now had a challenge every day that I had to work with. And I really had to concentrate in the morning to keep my momentum and keep moving and have hope. You just got to strive for it every day. You know there's an issue, but you can't get across to this physician to understand that there's an issue. And they seem to think it's just a passing thing, and it wasn't a passing thing. But damage lasted 2 years for me. To come off of that, actually, I've spoken with other people that have had a car accident and had a TBI and actually had that sort of damage and had to work through that for 4 or 5 years at a time and still have difficulty with memory or speech. So it's not always something you can recover from. So I take that with grace, and that I'm blessed to have moved past that point and be able to function in 2 jobs that I'm working right now, as well as doing this writing project, which seems to have a mission all its own.
Jeez. Well, no, I have a friend, and this is public knowledge, so this friend of mine won't mind me sharing this. I have a friend who was completely able-bodied. She got in a car accident on June 21st, 2017, I didn't find out until my birthday or the day after my birthday, quite frankly. And she had a traumatic brain injury. She is paralyzed now. But my dad asked me, because we went down to see her after she came out of a mentally induced coma, and my dad goes to me, why is she acting strange? And he knows that I have a TBI, and I said, Dad, that's a TBI. And
right.
To man explain to dude, hello, that's a TBI. And he goes, right. Oh. And then he moved on with the parents and the family members that were there supporting her. But I think it shocked him that she also had a TBI. And I'm like, dude, you know your own daughter has a TBI. And you were there for that one, too. But no, when you say family members don't necessarily understand the TBI, oh,
right.
Boy. Oh, boy. I knew exactly when I walked in to the hospital room what was going on with her. And it's like, dude, yeah, just give advice, please.
Right, right. You know, and that's funny, because even when I was not well and going through the symptoms of PTSD and found myself homeless, I bumped into a few people, one young man in particular, and I could tell that he was having symptoms of PTSD without even talking to him longer than 5 minutes, and that something had happened before then. And he was a very bright young man, but there was nothing that I could do to help him see past that. And it just made it more aware for me that the TBI and the PTSD were related. There was nothing I could do to stop it. It would have happened anyway. And for me, I don't have all those combat memories that a veteran would have. But I have life experiences, and some of them were traumatic. And just as much as my daily life experience as a child came up, so did those traumatic experiences came up, and I relived them and had to re-understand what had happened at the time. And it was an evaluation point for me to see that after so many years, my subconscious was still thinking about it. So, It was definitely an experience I don't wish on anybody else. And when I talk to people, and I talk to a lot of veterans here where I work too, I get a chance to meet them and speak with them for a few minutes. And more people are reaching out to me from civilian life now that want to talk about it. And I think that's what's not being addressed. There are treatments available for the veterans, but the treatments that they're offering for the civilians are not the same. And I think we need to have that facility across the state for everybody to understand that a TBI and PTSD and complex PTSD, that we need to move forward and help these people also that are being affected. And that's what I really want to get together and get to a ground point and start talking about. And maybe
now,
go ahead.
Now, I have a question. I know what PTSD is, and I know what a TBI is, of course, because I have one, thank you very much, but I don't know what complex PTSD is. What's the difference between PTSD, normal post-traumatic stress syndrome, and complex PTSD? Because the reason why I say that is because now a lot of stuff is coming up about Agent Orange in the Vietnam War, and I am just wondering if those veterans who fought in Vietnam have complex PTSD, and they don't even know it yet.
Well, that's the thing. It is such a difficult thing to describe. And me not being a medical physician and not having that professional background, I'm going to leave that question to someone who is more qualified to answer that, because I think it does have to do with history, and that it has not been addressed as something that can be treated. When people come up with complex PTSD, I really don't have a true understanding of that yet as much as I do PTSD and TBI. I think it has more to do with the medical terminology and how it is stressed as far as how long they have suffered with it and how long they have been or abused with it and had trauma. And I think that is a strong relationship there, whereas mine were short instances of traumatic experiences that put me through my symptoms. So I think there is a difference, and I'm pretty sure there is, because a lot of people have come up with complex PTSD. But I don't have a clear medical answer on that either, and I've been doing research, and I'm still not understanding the medical aspects of that. So I would rather defer that to someone like Dr. John King, who could probably answer that better than I could, because I don't want to offend anybody, and there is a difference. So it's hard to have people answer those questions for you who are suffering with it, because I don't think there is enough public support to help them work through that. And that's something that I would really like to, you know, see get better with more support and more publicity and more medical support from therapists and people who do the CBT training and the rapid eye movement training. I think we can address both issues and show the medical community that it is something that is overwhelming the public in general, not just veterans, and that it needs to be addressed.
And it definitely needs to be addressed. So I'm putting a call out to a PTSD expert. If anyone who's listening to Ask Gwen knows a PTSD expert, please, 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 please get in contact with me so I can figure out what complex PTSD is, because I want to educate the public as much as Carol does. And with PTSD, I know what PTSD is. I'm not that of an idiot, but and yes, I just called myself an idiot because
yes.
I know so much medical jargon that it's not even funny. And so I know what PTSD is, but I don't know what the science, I don't know the symptoms, I don't know any of it, especially when it comes to complex PTSD. So please, if anyone knows of any professional who wants to come on this podcast and speak, please let me know.
Yeah, see, complex PTSD I know is a severe and repetitive trauma that typically happens in childhood and most often is abuse. It could be sexual abuse. It could be incest. And that's pretty much the only definition I know of complex PTSD. But the severity of that, I'm understanding that those people that are reaching out to me that have that, have been living with that trauma and been living with complex PTSD all of their life, and they find it hard to find any treatment or find any support that really lets them continue on and move forward in life and actually feel that they've gotten past it. There's not enough talk about it. We're not admitting that the abuse is out there and that the trauma is out there for these kids. And that's part of the issue that I want to bring up. And a lot of those complex PTSD people are reaching out to me as well. But it is severe, repetitive trauma that usually happens in childhood. my trauma that I had with my PTSD was short bursts in childhood. It was actually a work situation. As an emergency medical technician, I went to a run and experienced a very traumatic event that has lasted with me through my lifetime. A couple of the things that had happened, and those were just put together, and I ended up reliving them. But it wasn't the repetitive childhood trauma that complex PTSD sufferers have. So I was fortunate in some ways, but I still had the symptoms after the head injury. And what was funny was I didn't get those symptoms of the PTSD right away after the concussion. It actually took months into the first year before it started rearing symptoms of reliving situations, and I did not understand what was going on at the time. I actually had to start asking my physician, and she completely ignored my question and just thought speech therapist was the answer. And when I spoke with a speech therapist and told her my symptoms and what was going on and when I find difficulty is when I was reliving my life history, she told me, I can't help you. You have to talk to your doctor. I'm like, wait a minute, she just referred me to you. So what's going on? Yeah, and I ran up against the wall, and my family ran up against the same wall and had no idea how to support me. My family was just waiting for a time that they felt that they could approach me and help me move forward. Because literally at night the anxiety would rear and I would be texting until, you know, wee hours in the morning because the frustration level got there at night, and that was the only way I could communicate with people. And so my family began to understand there was an issue. They just didn't know how to handle it, and there was no support for them whatsoever. By the end of the second year, that's when I got some help, but it still wasn't the appropriate help.
There's barely any support for the veterans. You know, I have had an interview this week with a veteran who's now out of the service, and he stars on Modern Family. Well, good. And William C. Clifton, he goes by William C. And he said the Veterans Administration is so screwed up that it's not even funny. So if the vets are not getting help, I'm not surprised civilians are not getting help.
Right, right. Well, you know, there was 2 days ago a veteran attempted to commit suicide in a parking lot, and I'm still unclear because there's no information coming public if he actually did commit suicide or if he just caused a lot of injury. Somebody mentioned something about the situation, but I didn't get a clear understanding. And that's just another instance of someone coming out and having struggles and not getting the services they need to address the situation. And I feel horrible. I wish there was some way that we could communicate to all these people that are suffering that there is help, that we can help you, and at least we can try to understand the situation to help you relieve some of those symptoms and get better. For the CPSD people that have had so much trauma in their childhood, it's a long, long process, and it's very enduring, I can't imagine what they went through in their childhood and what they continue to relive day to day, because the triggers are there. So it's something you have to work through, and you really have to work hard to actually achieve some kind of peace every day. So and I'm reaching out to them, and they're speaking their past and what happened and everything, but not everybody is willing to come forward and do that. And I think unless we each come out and tell our story, the medical community will not do anything until they realize the impact of all these children that are now adults that are still having issues. So it doesn't go away. You can take them away from the situation, but they still have to relive it every day. The trauma is there, and you can't erase it. You have to live with it. So
and the psychologists who've been on the news lately because of the kids being separated from their parents in El Paso, Texas, Laredo, and all that jazz, have said these kids will get PTSD or at least be stressed out about it because, and the government is not doing anything. So they won't even let physicians in. Thank you very much. They won't even let news reporters in. Thank you very much. Let alone physicians. So we need PTSD to, we need people to speak loudly and clearly and lovingly about PTSD and complex PTSD.
Yes, yeah, and yeah, these children are going to end up with complex PTSD because now they're their parents, and they're put into foster care situations. And I even saw an interview with a set of foster care parents who said that the child had come to their home completely in soiled clothing, would not eat for 2 days, and did not speak a word. So the trauma is already happening in those situations, and what they're doing with the separation is they're creating another population that is going to suffer from complex PTSD, and they just ignore it. They think it's just the law, and they're going to do what they need to do. And these people only sought asylum. That's all they are in fault of. So I think if I was in their same situation, I would attempt to do the same thing and find a safer place for my family to move into. But I don't think they understand the medical ramifications of what they're doing to the children. And the parents are totally stressed out by not being able to see their kids anymore. And this has been going on for a while. So what happened to all the other children when we first put this action in place? That's what I'd like to know. Have they ever gone back to their parents, or are they still in the foster care system after being separated for a couple years now? That somebody should ask.
Yes, exactly. And now, Carol, I know you had a couple of questions for me, so now I'm going to flip it and let you ask me those couple questions that you nicely texted me, and yes, I thought about my answers. So here we go on that.
Okay. What is the biggest challenge that you want to get across when you are doing public speaking?
I would like to help people with disabilities understand that they can come out with their disability, and I don't care what it is. I just want people to feel loved and supported by their disability. Let's say they have PTSD and they want to reach out to you or reach out to me. Let them. Don't hide in the corner with your disability.
Absolutely. I agree with you and Tyler entirely. Okay. Too often times people have this generalization that when a person has CP or Parkinson's or Graves' disease or mental health issue that they cannot think for themselves anymore. And this is not true. What would you say to that person to make them understand that we still think, have dreams and goals and want to be communicated with?
Well, first of all, a lot of people think that I'm dumb, and that's not true. Beyond belief, a lot of people with disabilities have college degrees. I know PhDs with CP that have college degrees, And I know doctors of psychology with CP that have college degrees, and I'm actually getting my degree in journalism. And even though money and math is not my strong point, and people know that, but they still want to test me on that. But other than that, people think that people with disabilities are not the sharpest tool in the shed, are not the brightest light bulb in the box. And I want to prove that people could go back to school and get their degrees and then move on.
Right. Yep. I agree with you entirely. My sister-in-law works with severely mentally handicapped. And so many times when we went to visit her in the classroom, you could tell just because they couldn't speak, they were still mentally intelligent. And they understood everything that you said to them, and they wanted to talk back. They were just incapacitated at that point. And I had a strong sense of urgency that people need to understand that, and it's not coming across in the public that way. They just assume that there is a deficiency, and there's not. These people are still healthy, mentally agile, and can achieve things in school and in life too, but they need to be given the opportunity just like anybody else.
Yeah. They do. And
go ahead.
That's what I want to prove. I want to prove that we're not dumb. We just need a little bit of help. And some people have a better strong point than others. I know plenty of people that math is not their strong point. And, yeah. But journalism is, and I'm here to prove it, you guys.
Yes, absolutely. In your achievements as a writer and a broadcaster, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
I see myself, in the next 5 years, I will have my MFA, which is a master's degree in fine arts. I am getting my associate's degree right now, and I've applied to another program after I get my associate's degree to complete my MFA/my bachelor's degree in creative writing. And so in the next 5 years, I will have my MFA.
Wow. I am so impressed. That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
I always wanted a master's degree in something, but no. I thought it would go be in education. I didn't realize it would go be in creative writing.
Yes, yeah. It's funny the way life takes you.
Yeah. It's actually funny the way life takes me, and the reason why you guys is that I'm not getting my degree, my master's degree in education, is because I was traumatized by the education system. God bless my mom, who would have been 66 years old today as we record this interview on June 28th, but my mom put me in a horrible situation, and even though I love you, Mom, I'm still not forgiving you for the horrible situation you put in. You know exactly what I'm talking about. She put me in a horrible situation with a boss from hell who was bipolar and who had all issues going on. So, and my boss, at the time when I said, can I have a paycheck? And my dad was driving us home, and my boss just starts laughing at me and doesn't give me an answer. I got fired in 2009 when the economic crash happened. I don't know whether it was the economic class or whether my boss didn't like me. I think it was a 50-50 split between both because I was on volunteer status.
Oh, I see.
So I think it was 50% my boss didn't like me and the economic class.
Mm-hmm. That's a difficult situation to be in. Yeah.
With a boss's bipolar, geez.
Yeah.
No. That story is public. That, I mentioned that one in my book, and my dad, who actually got me out of that situation, thank you very much, Dad, because he saw the big picture. He saw that I was getting depressed and everything else. My mom didn't see the big picture, even though I love her and she loved me very much, but she didn't see the big picture. She just wanted me out of the house. And so when I mentioned it in my book, my dad read my original book. He goes, who's the aide who had the, almost had the depression attack on you? I said, my boss had depression and, we get to Dallas, Texas, whereupon we were supposed to be attending, early childhood convention. My boss turns around to me and we've just checked into the hotel, and she goes, I forgot my depression medication at home.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay. And she goes, if I don't get it, I will get wonky on you.
Oh.
And then she starts laughing at me.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Traumatized by the education system.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this was from 2006 to 2009.
Oh,
and
wow.
The friend that got me the job, believe it or not, we're still friends to this day.
Oh, oh wow.
Yeah. No, we had the boss from hell. We all got out of there. As adults, we're being emotionally abused. Because they were being emotionally abused, they weren't doing anything to help me. And so that's why I'm walking away from the education system. Now I still work in education, but it's the paycheck that I'm walking away from, not the people. And that's why I will never get my master's degree in education, because I was traumatized by the education system.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
My last question is, what do you believe is the biggest accomplishment a person with physical or mental health challenges can achieve in life?
Can achieve in life? Well, if you're a veteran, I know there's the GI Bill. I know there's the GI Bill. It just has to take paperwork, obviously. And you guys have to still sign your GI Bill and say you want to go back to school, and the GI Bill will still support you. And I don't know how much they will give you on the GI Bill, but I know my program and a bunch of other programs. My program happens to be the Academy of Arts in San Francisco, and I know that basically the GI Bill will help support you guys, because I know most of these programs help support you guys. So send yourself back to school if you want a different degree, or just keep learning to get over those learning disabilities. I mean, how to get rid of a speech impediment quick. Have a podcast.
Okay, that would be awesome.
Yeah, how to get rid of a speech impediment quick, have a podcast, and just do that. And so I think if people just become a lifelong learner, that will save them in the long run.
I think the more people have a podcast and the more people express their way of life and the challenges that they have every day and how they meet them, I think the public would have a better understanding of what it is to be able to work with a disease or a condition or a mental health issue. There's not enough understanding going around, and there's just an automatic assumption that you can't function anymore and that you don't have the knowledge or the intelligence anymore to work with other people, and that's so not true. I work with a company that allows anybody to go ahead and apply for and get a job in and actually assist them in having a regular work life. So I'm very impressed that I was able to get hired at the time, because for me, looking back, with my challenges and the treatment that they were offering me at the time, I was surprised that I would even get hired, and I did get hired. But, I'm very thankful for that, that there was that company out there, because without that, I wouldn't have kept my hope going and actually felt that things could get better and it would change and I would be back to myself again.
Yeah, well, and what is that company you're speaking of?
You know, Home Depot is actually the company I'm speaking of.
Equal opportunity employer, because I know Whole Foods is, I have witnessed it with my own eyes. I know Starbucks is, I know
yes.
Walmart is. Walmart will actually pay for a college degree, associate degree, or for a bachelor's degree. I know that my company that I teach with, Country Day, Aspen Country Day, is an equal opportunity employer, / I was a student there, so that's how I got in. But you just have to find equal opportunity employers. And
yes.
As I said, Starbucks is an equal opportunity employer. So for those
yes,
of same. You that like people, you can be a barista.
Yes. There are a lot of companies that are equal opportunity employer, and it really is a law that every employer should be offering it, but at least I think it is with disabilities. I'm not entirely sure of the laws specifically as they range from state to state, but I know Starbucks across the board will look at you and hire you. I know Home Depot will, and I know there are some other good companies that will, like you said, Walmart. But to actually, I would have never put myself in that thought process and go and apply. It was just on a whim, and I thought, well, maybe they'll take me, maybe they won't, because they can see that I'm having difficulty mentally. And they hired me, and they allowed me to work as a cashier. And it's like, wow, this was better than I thought it was going to be. And the training and everything and the support and the love that they gave me, there are no words to express the changes in me that were appreciative of that opportunity with them. And then the temporary job that I started working with in October, that supervisor has also been forthcoming. Let's get you trained. Let's get you in every opportunity, in every class. And she's been so motivated and motivating me to do better as well. And, when you go through an injury or you have to live with a disability, you hope that you run into those type of people that see that you can do better or that see that you have growth and that you can offer something to the public in your, just in your stamina and being there every day. And that's what I look for when I interview for a job. I want to see the same mindset that is positive and reinforcing and caring and actually compassionate. And I think we all need to learn from that, but it, you don't find it all the time.
And I was going to say the boss that hired me wasn't supportive of me. He wasn't supportive of my colleagues, quite frankly. My colleagues had physical disabilities. Some had cancer. Some had hearing loss. Some had diabetes. We have a slew of people with disabilities that work up at Country Day. And my boss now, who I acquired when my ex-boss retired, is more supportive of me now than when I originally got the job.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's interesting. If you get a boss who's more supportive of you now than when you originally got the job, that seals the deal right there. But my boss originally, no, he wasn't supportive of anything or anyone.
Yeah, you know, I think people take it for granted that they can move around, that they are physically able to go for a walk or drive a car or actually take a shower every morning. Those little things that people take for granted every day, when they see someone else that's challenged with that ability, think they have a better understanding and they develop more compassion. I don't think compassion is something you're born with. I think you really have to share it with someone and either educate them and be an example of striving to be better, or you have to impress on them that, look, you may be more fortunate than I am physically or maybe even mentally, but you have no idea what that other person is going through in order to get through their day. And, you know, the elderly are suffering as well and are having challenges as well because they can't take care of themselves anymore. And we all need to have that compassion no matter what age group, a child, a teenager, a 40-year-old, or an elderly person. And I don't think that message is getting across. And I try and initiate that compassion every time I have a conversation, because I really do believe, and I believed it for a long time, but after the accident it was even more evident, that you do not know what the other person's struggle is. And unless you come to that conversation with that thought in mind, there is no real communication going on. There's nothing from the heart coming out, and there's no honesty and no integrity there unless you approach each person with that thought and that compassion and giving of yourself. And I think...
Well, that's a lovely way to end this interview. That's a lovely statement to end it.
Oh, thank you,
Ann. Well, thank you for coming on and explaining more of what you do. And as I said, I need someone right now to explain to me from the medical background what complex PTSD is and how we as a community can help you, because that would be a very interesting episode for you to listen to, Gail, because you don't know what complex PTSD is. You know what PTSD is. We all know that we need more advocates in this field.
Yeah. The most that I can tell you with complex PTSD is it is repeated trauma as a child.
Yeah.
Repeated abuse as a child. But their symptoms are similar to PTSD. But they are dealing with it every day. The flashbacks are every day. It does not readily you can't turn this off. You have to learn how to calm your mind and how to deal with those memories every day. And unfortunately, it is a bigger definition out there than I can offer as a medical profession. Dr. King could probably offer a better definition for complex PTSD than I could. And I don't want anybody to be offended and say that PTSD and complex PTSD are the same thing. I don't believe that they are. I think there's more depth and damage to complex PTSD, and I think that it's something that a lot of the kids that are now adults are trying to lead normal lives, but when I have conversations with them, they honestly tell me it is a challenge every day to just be able to move past that and enjoy their life. And I can understand from reliving the little bit of trauma that I had in my life how much more devastating it would be for them to have to suffer with that daily and try and communicate those feelings and that compassion to others. And I have respect for them. I have love for them. I have hugs for them. I wish it never happened, but we have to deal with the abuse and the sexual abuse that's going on, and those are the ones that are suffering the complex PTSD, and that puts it a little bit different than just PTSD, whereas I was able to finally get relieved of the symptoms and not have the flashbacks anymore, and I'm here trying to reach out and actually help others hopefully reach out further and see that you can have more of your life back. But you really have to work hard at it.
Yes, you do. And where could people find you, and how could they reach out to you if they wanted to have a private conversation with you?
Well, I've got them on Twitter, on my Twitter feed, and I've got them on Instagram. People are reaching out, and we're having just regular conversations so far, and so people have explained to me what they're going through. I really haven't stepped through that door as a medical professional because I cannot offer that to them, but I can offer them a lot of compassion, a lot of care, and hopefully help address some of the resources that are missing out there. I have found a few places that offer treatment, and I found a few therapists that really do help with talking through it and trying to get you to at least release some of that tension and realize what's triggering those episodes and what's coming back into play. So my email is oneworld1people1@gmail.com, and my phone number is 408-438-0398 if people want to reach out. And I truly hope that I didn't offend anybody with CPTSD. It is a much more complex definition than I can offer, and I really respect and believe that a doctor should be talking about this subject as well as PTSD and TBI, and that's what I want to reach. I want to get that together, get that on a website so that people can start doing their own questions and seeing that they need help, because there's nothing online out there to support them, and the doctors are not answering those questions in the offices either, from my experience. I got no support, and that was the worst thing, because I ended up homeless because of it. If they would have warned me, I could have warned my family, and we could have done something to stop the actions that I did while suffering the symptoms. And I literally created my own homeless situation because of it. And I know that's hard to realize, but when you're not in control and you're suffering through the symptoms, you really need to have that family or friend, loving support, to step back with you and say, hey, we need to think about this. Don't do this right now. And I didn't have that. My family did not know what was going on. They didn't understand, and I don't cite them for it either because there was no help with the medical community to address the situation and to at least put me in a safer place where I could go through the symptoms and still be home instead of homeless. For me, when I was on the street, my only thought was, this has got to get better, and I can't let anybody else go through this. This is so much pain. I want to make it better for someone else, and I want to show them that you can get out of this and that you can have a life again and you can be with your family. You've got to work for it. You've got to work hard, and you've got to want it, and you can't give up.
Well, we're going to try, and if people want to reach out to me privately, they can always email me from my Twitter profile. My Twitter profile says my email right on it. And my Twitter profile is Wynn Kelly Charles. Wynn, W-I-N, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Charles, C-H-A-R-L-E-S. And my phone number is also in the show notes. My phone number is 970-618-8840. And I do respond to texts and tweets, you guys. We need to get this subject out. We need to get this subject opened. We need to get this subject heard by the medical community about TBIs but more importantly about PTSD. So, PTSDers don't feel like they're in isolation, and we need to do this. So if anyone wants to reach out to me on complex PTSD, by any means, you're more than welcome to it, or reach out to Carol, and you're more than welcome to share this podcast out with anyone that you may know who has PTSD and will be supportive of you and will help you. So I hope you guys enjoyed another fabulous episode. And this is a great episode to bring up on what would have been my mom's 66th birthday, June 28th. And hopefully we can save lives with this episode, Gail.
Thank you, I hope you guys
enjoyed another fabulous episode.
Thank you, Wynn, so much.
Thank you. Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye.